Blog Talk Radio.
Honey, put this on top of the minivan.
We're only going for 2 weeks. You want me to back the kitchen sink, too?
Well, is there room?
Hey, you guys. You going on vacation?
Who's that?
I don't know.
Because we're planning on robbing your house tonight.
All right, I'm calling an alarm service.
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. There's a simple blood test called A1C that can help measure your risk of complications from diabetes. Why is it important? Because more than 600 people every day die from diabetes and its complications. If your A1C is above 7, your doctor can show you how to lower it. If you have diabetes, know your risk. Know your A1C. Ask your doctor, or for more information, go to www.diabetesa1c.org or call 1-877-TEST-A1C. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International, and the Ad Council.
Good morning, and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes, and I want to thank you so much for listening this morning. I have a beautiful, new, young, fresh author on today, Danielle Evans. And as she says on her blog, she says, if you've gotten here by accident, I am not the Danielle Evans who won America's Next Top Model, Danielle Evans, the martial arts champion, Danielle Evans, the photographer, or any other people who share my surprisingly popular name. So she's just a fiction writer and professor of creative writing and literature at American University. Good morning, Danielle.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. And as I was saying earlier, please excuse my voice. I'm a little bit under the weather today.
Well, that I wanted to say thank you so much for coming on, even though you're not feeling well. You have a wonderful new book out, Before You Suffocate Your Own Full Self. Now, try to say that 5 times, people. Before You Suffocate Your Own Full Self. You can check her website out at DanielleValerieEvans.com. Again, DanielleValerieEvans.com to learn more about her. She has a blog there about where she's going to be reading from the book in your area. And also she has a new book, which we'll talk about later. But I want to read a part from one of her stories, The King of a Vast Empire. The king of a vast empire is so impressed with his new and foreign territories that he is hardly home, foregoing the palace to visit the rest of his realm. Lonely, the queen takes a lover, a nobleman in a neighboring town. Not wanting to raise the awareness of the king's loyal guard, she sneaks out of the palace to meet him disguised as a peasant. The guard is aware of this deception, but says nothing and does nothing to stop her. Traveling alone, the queen is attacked and murdered by highway robbers who have no idea who she is. Who is most at fault for the queen's death? The robbers, the guard, the queen, the king, or the lover? This is just a brief section of Danielle Evans' Before You Suffocate Your Own Full Self. And in that story, it's kind of a sample. She has you on the edge. And you question what you believe is right and wrong sometimes, I think, in reading some of your stories. I definitely felt that I was on the edge of, oh, wow, great. And then, what was that? I felt a little uncomfortable. Wow, what's going on there? She deals with sex. She deals with race. She deals with politics, friendships, family. She has a lot of children in her different stories and where they are in relation to adults and how adults view them and who they are. So let me just start off, Danielle. Of course, this is a typical question. Why writing? Because I read from where you started off in anthropology.
Well, in college, I studied anthropology. But even then, I don't think of that as being the way that I write terribly different than fiction. I mean, I was interested in anthropology because I really like to think about why people do what they do. And in some sense, anthropology is also kind of trying to translate one person's experience or one group of people's experience into something that another person can understand when they read it, except that anthropology requires you to actually document things and use footnotes. And I realized that I would just get really frustrated when something would happen and I'd have to record it the way it actually happened. I'd have to record what somebody actually said. And I would think, but it would be such a better story if it happened this other way. I was telling somebody recently that as a kid I could never keep a diary because I would try And I would just either I would start lying to protect myself in case somebody found it, or I would start lying because I think this is boring. Nobody wants to read this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to make it more interesting. So I think I just, that instinct would have not suited me well in a profession that relied upon sticking to the truth. And
footnotes, APA style.
For reality, so I wanted to leave it alone for the people who were better at recording it. but I think that I...
Well, say that.
I always had
one
goal to be a writer. I wanted to be a writer and all of these other things, largely because I felt like a writer wasn't something you could really grow up to be and pay your rent. And so I've been pleasantly surprised that it's worked out that it's been possible to do that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, though. I mean, you somehow still really delve deeply into the psyche of people and women, I think, and women and their choices. One of the first stories in the book, Virgins, which was also published previously, before the book came out, but that story I really connected with, you know, having a girlfriend and maybe they had the one guy who they used to hang out with that kind of protected them from the other guys in a sense, in a kind of passive way, just being there, just hanging out in the summertime. I really could connect with the story, listening to the rap and Biggie Smalls and Tupac and all that. But one of the and this is where you put us on the precipice, Danielle, is that I was just floating along with the story, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, they're going to hook up with the guy. One of them's going to hook up with the guy. But then you take them somewhere else, and this is where the issues of class and power and sex and stuff come in. But I'm going to read from Virgins a little bit here. The car stopped in front of an apartment building, and I followed them into the lobby and into the elevator. An earring guy still had his arms around Jasmine, and pretty eyes guy was still looking at me. If I'd wanted to lose my virginity to a random guy in the Bronx, I would have done it already, not just let Jasmine give it away. I knew if she saw my face, she would know how mad I was, but she had her head in earring guy's neck. The clicks and dings in the elevator seemed like they were saying something in a language I didn't speak. I thought about pulling her off of him. I thought about hitting her. They pushed the button for the 8th floor, but the doors opened on 5. There was nobody standing there, and I kept waiting for the thing that would stop us. And then I thought, nothing will stop this but me. So I ran out of the elevator and down the stairs and out the front door and down the bodega to the bodega on the corner. Now, did something like this happen to somebody you know, or you just know that this happens to young girls that are going in the city and they're looking for love type of thing? How did you come about the story for Virgins?
Well, I mean, I was thinking about a lot of, not any specific incident, but lots of different, you know, I think as a teenage girl, you're constantly bombarded with the opportunity to do things that you might regret. And so I was thinking about, I had a teacher say once, you think about the trick of fiction is having a character say yes every time a reasonable person would say no. Because sometimes when you do that, you have to think about what would make that character behave that way in that moment. And I wanted it to be also kind of complicated. I didn't want it to just be a thing where, you know, all of the men were predatory and all of the girls were naive, because I think that was not true of my own experience of adolescence, that there was this way in which being an adolescent girl was both terrifying because it made you vulnerable, but also had a certain kind of power to it, or a certain
power.
Kind of
yeah, definitely. You had a certain power, like, over the guys. You knew they were looking at your developing body, the sway of your hips, you know, depending on your hairstyle, your perfume. That was a big thing, starting to wear perfume. I remember starting to wear makeup as a young girl. I remember playing with my mother's makeup, but then she wouldn't let me wear certain colors because that was too adult, you know. So.
And it was important to me that she leave in that moment because I didn't want losing her virginity to be something that happened to her, but I also didn't want it to be an easy thing. So I had that character leave in that moment, so that the choices that she makes later in the story were choices that were not made under that kind of pressure.
Yeah, so it's funny that she even ends up. Yeah, she ends up in another crazy situation anyway. I think life is about choices, and definitely all your characters, like you said, they're making choices where maybe a reasonable person might say no, and I'm not going to go down that alley. But your character's like, what's down that alley? Let me go see. And then we as the reader are sucked in, like, wait, don't go down the alley. Like I was reading Virgins, and I'm like, oh, don't get in a car. Oh, man. Okay, get off the elevator. Right, get off the elevator. But then not knowing that the other girl didn't get off the elevator, and I was mad at you, Danielle. I was like, dang. Why didn't you get off the elevator? You know what's going to happen. You know what's going to happen, right? But then the other girl gets off the elevator, and then you're, like, surprised about what happens to her. I'm not going to tell the story because I don't want to give it away. You know, if you're listening, you got to pick up Danielle Evans before you suffocate your own full self. Also, she has a website, DanielleValerieEvans.com, so you want to check that out. Now, one of the other issues you deal with in the book is race. And all throughout in different stories, race, even at the end, the Robert E. Lee story and everything, but the little daughter, the little children, this is where I loved one of the things you did. You had children put in precarious situations with adults, but that illuminated adults' faults. You know, the grandmother in Snakes was just crazy. I mean, where did the grandmother come from?
Well, I mean, I was thinking, I wanted it to be, part of her issue was race, but part of it was also the relationship she had with her own daughter. I mean, I was thinking about the way that the families can sometimes replicate themselves even without trying to. But I was also, in some ways, I thought about that story as kind of a, you know, the archetypical tragic mulatto story is the mixed race person is rejected by their white family and therefore suffers because of it and is, like, living in poverty or living badly. And I thought in a more contemporary way it might be interesting to play with that archetype and think, what would happen if, like, the child was rejected by the white family, but it was kind of okay because the family was crazy? If in some sense
right.
being removed from the family made things possible in somebody's life in this way that they didn't have to, that they didn't have to be a part of this drama. And of course, the character doesn't completely escape that. And you know, that regret when it shows up, I think, pretty powerfully. That was kind of where I started, and the story took some departures from that. But I was thinking about, would it be kind of fun to play with this idea that, like, the best thing that can happen for you as a mixed race person is for your white family to love you? Because even the dogs, the people the grandmother loves don't quite. I mean, she's a person who it was difficulty expressing that love in a way that's functional for anybody, including, you know, her white daughter and her white granddaughter.
Yeah, I mean, she's not, the grandmother's not close to the daughter. She's not close to the other children that she had. And there's, like, the constant push and pull. Let me read a little bit from Snakes there. This is a scene between the grandmother and the little girl. She never said a word. She started snipping quickly, unevenly, the rhythm of her anger punctuated by the growing pile of tight black curls on the floor. It didn't occur to me to run. It didn't occur to me that there was anywhere to go. I don't know how long Allison had been watching. I only know that when it was over and all but a half an inch of my shoulder length, when it lay flat hair, was piled on the floor, Allison was in the doorway looking straight at my grandmother. That's just a paragraph from Danielle Evans' book, a new book, Before You Suffocate Your Own Full Self, and the story is called Snakes. You have to read the book to find out why it's called Snakes. I'm not even going to go into that. But that brings me to the issue of lying. You got a lot of lying going on around here, Danielle. what should I make of this lying? I mean, in real life, it's funny. Sometimes we lie, and your characters in the book lie to protect people. Sometimes they're lying to protect themselves. They're using it as a power. As a writer, did you see this issue of lying in other stories that you read, maybe, and you said, let me bring it in here? Or,
you know, I hadn't thought. It wasn't until the very last story that I wrote for the book where I was thinking of it really as a book. For the most part, they were just stories I was writing independently. So that is, I don't know, Freud would probably have fun with how often that theme recurs. I was at a reading recently, someone asked me what I wanted to be as a child, and I was like, well, I wanted to be an actress, then I wanted to be a politician, then I grew up to be a writer, and I thought, oh, my God, maybe I have a casual relationship with the truth. Like, those are the things I wanted to be when I grew up. But aesthetically, I'm really interested, because I write a lot of first-person stories, and I write a lot of close third, and so I'm really interested in how people tell stories. I mean, I think that's part of the story itself, is how a person is able to talk about something that happened to them and what they can feel and what they start with and how long it takes them to get to the sort of heart of the story. And and how they're able to talk about and not talk about things. I mean, a lot of what I'm writing about is trauma and sometimes repressed trauma, and so it's a question of what does it mean that it took you this long to say this or that you still can't say this, and
mm-hmm.
how do you kind of see around that narration, and how do you see where the character's lying and whether it's a protective gesture toward themselves or toward someone else. So I think that's definitely something I'm interested in as a writer. That's probably why it shows up so much.
Well, that's interesting you're talking about people wanting... Sorry, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Just that the story belonging to the voice that's telling it. I think that's an interesting
mm-hmm.
way.
Well, it's funny you talk about people wanting to talk about things and repression and trauma. I was just recently told a story of someone I know was on a train, and they were listening the whole time on the train. People don't realize what people can hear. You know, people talk on the cell phones all the time on the bus and the train. But they were on a cello train, and the people behind them, they heard their whole conversation. Basically, just a conversation. There was a woman who was talking to a guy. They didn't know each other. Both were married. I guess they were kind of flirting, so on and so forth. But it came out at the end that why the guy was having so many issues in his life is that at the end of the conversation, when they're almost about to get off the train, he says, oh, he hadn't spoken to his dad in 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, and they were strangers. They were strangers. So it's funny what you're going to tell a stranger, but you won't tell your close family. And in your book, it talks a lot about families and the relationship, divorce, and parents and kids. And one of the stories is about the young girl who's an artist and her relationship with her father and how he's always late. But one of the interesting things is that in that story, he tries to connect with her by going back into this house that's about to fall. Did you know of a story where a house actually collapsed in New York somewhere, or you just thought, again, just an interesting intersection of, things collapse?
With something really, like something bigger that becomes one minor detail in the story, it kind of, I mean, what I'd originally thought was that there was this box that he wanted, and my father and I have a wonderful relationship, and he's been really supportive, but I was living in New York during September 11th, and he was actually working in World Trade Plaza, though not in one of the towers. And so, you know, he wasn't there that morning, but his office building had gotten parts of the World Trade Center fell on it, and so they had to be moved, and they couldn't get back into their offices. And so, and apparently, he just bought me this present like before the day before I'd had it in his office because I was supposed to go meet him there for lunch. And so,
mm-hmm.
a couple of weeks after 9/11, I get these calls from my father saying like, I have this blender, and I don't know when they're going to, like, because they would tell him, you can come back in the office to get your files or to get this, and they were, you know, clearing and processing things. And so I get these, like, weekly updates on the blender and when I could have the blender, and I was, of course, like, Daddy, I don't care about this blender right now. Like, that's the last thing that I care about,
right.
Like, in the middle of all of this national trauma, and I'm glad you're okay. But it would just seem really, with some distance, like, I was thinking about the way that people get fixated on an object and how that, because, I mean, it wasn't obviously about a blender. He was, like, trying to tell me that everything was going to be okay, that everything was going to be normal again, you know? And the way in which that objects become gestures. So I think that was where the idea of, like, this person trying to get something, to show somebody something tangible came from. But the characters themselves, I think, took off from there. And I was also thinking in that story about, you know, intergenerational things and the way in which part of why the daughter in that story looks so lost to the father is because he didn't have the luxury of, like, having a space in his 20s where he had to find himself, right? Because that's
yeah.
kind of class-based concept, the idea that you can kind of bounce around for a part of your life and it's going to somehow be okay because he didn't have that kind of a cushion that he's offering her, even though
mm-hmm.
she's rejecting.
At least a blender. At least this is what I have for you. Yeah. Let me read a little bit from that. That's the story, Jellyfish. This is at the end. Daddy, Eva said, pushing away the half-full plate of pasta. Oh, Daddy, that's wonderful for you and wonderful for you to think of me, but I think we just get in each other's way. Besides, I like living in my studio, and you need your own space. Everybody needs their own space. Eva saw the look on her father's face and fought the urge to take back what she said. He looked almost the way he had looked when she and her mother had first left him. She closed her eyes and could remember nothing but that morning years ago, dull sky, October leaves on the ground. He had taken her to get a last slice of New York pizza while her mother watched the moving men put the last of their things on the truck. It's not so far away, he'd said. Remember how much Daddy loves you. The whole world, much and then some, she remembered. She thought of love being like tentacles reaching from wherever he was to wherever she was. She giggled. Is that funny? He asked. I'm thinking of you like a jellyfish, she said, but he hadn't understood. So you have some wonderful writing in here, Danielle, and I think we have a caller. Let me see if they have a question here. Good morning. You're calling from 571 area code. Do you have a question?
Yes. I wanted to find out. I recently read the entire book, and I really loved it. I was curious as to how you developed your characters. Were they all based, and I may have missed this because I'm coming in late, but were they all just developed whole cloth out of your imagination, or are they all pieces of people that you know?
I think for the most part, they end up being mostly imagined. I mean, sometimes you start with, my cousin's always on me because he swears that every summer he used to say, like, the in Virgins there's a line about black people don't wear sunscreen. And he was like, I told you that all summer, every summer. You need to pay me. But obviously, that character is not actually
That was a funny
cousin,
part.
So
that was a funny part. That was,
any money. I don't know. Sometimes, like I said, I like to think about sometimes things that happen to people. But in real life, I find that people are often people act with some kind of decorum or with some kind of sense. And so I'm interested in what happens when you kind of do the more interesting thing. And so sometimes I'll start with something that happened to somebody, but I'll put somebody else in that situation and think, well, how would that story be different if it had happened to somebody else? Because I think for me, if what I'm writing, I can't always know exactly how it's going to turn out. If I'm not surprised, then I'm bored. And if I'm bored, then the reader's probably going to be bored. So I have to leave some possibility in the story. And if I start with a person I know and a thing that happened to that person, then the story is already there, then there's nothing for me to kind of discover or write my way into. So sometimes I will think about a particular person, but put them in an experience that never happened to them, which, of course, changes who that person is. Or I'll think about a particular experience and just invent a character for it to happen to.
Well, thank you so much, caller. Go ahead. You had another question?
Yeah, actually, in one of the stories there is, I can't think of the name of it. It might have been Wherever You Go, There You Are. I'm not sure. But I believe that's the one where the family is dealing with the grandfather dying. And the only person that can take care of this adolescent girl who's 14 years old is a 25-year-old who really doesn't know what the devil she's doing. And so they go to North Carolina to see her on again, off again, not really her boyfriend, but definitely the closest person in her life. But she lets this 14-year-old, she brings her into the bar. Okay, tell me where her brain was. She brings her into the bar, and the girl goes into the restroom and changes into a mini hooker outfit.
Yeah.
And she doesn't get her face washed, and she's wearing stilettos. And she's coming on the guys. And I know that she's acting out of just plain abandonment because her father has not paid one whit of attention to her the entire summer.
Well, Carla, that's interesting that you say that, abandonment. I mean, a lot of her characters are abandoned, whether it's by their parents. The little girl in Snakes is left by her parents at the grandparents' house.
The
boyfriend, the brother in the story, I forgot the name of that one, but he's left by his girlfriend, and that's a whole dramatic, because the girlfriend's like crazy, you know, throwing glass and reading 6,000 newspapers. But I want to thank you for calling, and we only have a couple minutes left. Let me get Danielle's response. Go ahead, Danielle.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the characters that was the most fun to write because I didn't have to make her work to do things. She just kind of, she was impulsive and she kind of was doing what she was doing and I just got to kind of follow her. And that was the story where I didn't expect it to end where it ended because the character had sort of made so many problematic decisions all along. I didn't actually expect her to kind of put the brakes on where it seemed like the story was going. So I was proud of her at the end of that story. But I don't know, It seems to me that they're, again, part of what made her have to reevaluate her life was having there be somebody else watching it, and that to me was the interesting dynamic in that story, is the way in which having to somehow be maternal for this girl who had been effectively abandoned by both of her parents made her think about her own relationship with her mother, but also her own relationship to herself. And suddenly what she was doing mattered, and who she was mattered, because there was somebody who wanted to emulate it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me, one of the, talking about being somebody else, a lot of your characters are, I guess, putting on a show for themselves, just to protect themselves emotionally or protect other people. But one of the really touching stories is someone ought to tell her there's nowhere to go. That's about, well, it's about a lot of things, but one of the main characters, the guy who went to Iraq, he came back and he was dealing with some PTSD, post-traumatic stress stuff going on. I'm going to read a little bit from there. But he told the doctors everything and then some. He didn't care anymore what his file said, as long as it had got him the fuck out of that place. And the truth is, right before the Army let him go, sent him packing with a prescription and a once-a-month check-in with the shrink at the VA hospital, it had gotten really bad. One night he was sure the older girl had come to him in a dream and told him Peterson had come back and killed her. Skinny Peterson, who didn't even like to kill the beetles that slipped into their blankets every night. But nonetheless, he held Peterson at gunpoint until Ramirez came in and snapped him out of it. Another time he got convinced Jones really was going to kill him one day and ran up to him outside of the mess hall grabbing for his pistol. Three or four guys had to pull him off. Once in the daytime he saw one of the dead girls, bold as brass, standing outside on the street there. They were patrolling. He went to shake her by the shoulders, ask her what she'd been playing at, pretending to be dead all this time, but he had only just grabbed her when Ramirez pulled him off of her, shaking his head. And when he looked back at the girl's tear-streaked face before she ran for it like there was no tomorrow, he realized she was someone else entirely. Ramirez put an arm around him and started to say something, then seemed to think better of it. He looked down the road at the place that the girl had just been. The fuck you think she's running to so fast anyway? Someone ought to tell her there's nowhere to go. I mean, that's a really deep issue. We only have 3 minutes left, but I wanted to leave with that because it just shows how powerful your writing is, Danielle. Veterans, that's a really big issue, not having support. And this guy was dealing with flashbacks of some young girls he had seen. He tried to protect them first in your story, but then unfortunately he wasn't able to. And he was haunted by that. So I think that's a good issue that you brought up in your books. So now you have a new book. Let's mention the new book that you're writing.
Well, it's not
tell us about
out
that.
Yet, but I'm finishing it up now, so it should be out probably, if not next fall, then next the spring of the next year. But it's a big novel, and it's about a woman who works at a DC charter school, and her job is to rewrite the history textbook. So she's trying to write a progressive history of the United States, which of course becomes immediately problematic because progressive by whose definition, and what does that mean?
Exactly.
How do you do that kind of research if the paperwork doesn't even exist or the stories you want to tell, you know, haven't been recorded? And so she decides to take this more personal approach to history, and in doing so uncovers a connection between her own family and this historical event. She discovers that her grandmother, who's white but who's married to a black man and has black children, has had this role in a race riot in the 50s that has not been made public. And so suddenly there's this tension between her own desire to sort of, her own approach, philosophical approach to history, which has been to tell as much of the truth as possible at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
And the more truth there is, the more we can actually process history, and this desire to protect her own family. And there's also a subplot involving the younger sister who's having some trouble in school, and another subplot involving a Senate election that becomes tied to the school that she's working for. So
you got a lot of layers going on in there, but I want to tell the readers again, check out Danielle Evans Before You Suffocate Your Own Fool Self. Check out her website, DanielleValerieEvans.com. And if you retweet at Joy Keys, I listen to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, you can win a free copy of her book. Again, retweet at Joy Keys, and you can win a free copy of Danielle Evans Before You Suffocate Your Own Fool Self. Thank you so much, Danielle, for coming on this morning, and I look forward to seeing your new book coming out.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much for having me.
You have a wonderful Saturday, okay?
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keys, or you can become a fan or like on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Again, if you want to win a free copy of Danielle Evans' new book, retweet at Joy Keys. I listen to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and you could possibly win a free copy. At 12 o'clock, I'm doing a special show with actor Dorian Gregory about diabetes, and also Nava White. She's a representative from the American Diabetes Association. This month is Diabetes Awareness Month, so we're going to be talking about that at 12 p.m. Eastern. So if you have time, stay tuned for that. And next week, I'll be talking about Alzheimer's. That's an episode at 11 a.m. Eastern, November 20th, so tune in to that. Thank you so much for listening today. Again, follow me on twitter.com/JoyKeys, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I hope you have a wonderful day, and if you have a chance, tune in at 12 o'clock after Dorian Gregory and the American Diabetes Association. You have a wonderful day.